Hiya, you are listening to Into It. It's the HuffPost UK Entertainment Podcast. I'm Daniel Welsh, and as usual, I've got my right-hand man, Ashley Percival, and my left-hand woman, Rachel McGraw, with us. Today, we're discussing unlikable characters in sitcoms, heavy storylines in soaps, and putting our pop knowledge to the test in a 90s quiz. But before all that, right, so I'm going to reason with you. So it does not always sound it, admittedly, but we do actually do some prep for this podcast. So today, we all sat down together, we came up with some ideas, we came up with some debates, because let's face it, it's been a bit of a slow news week. And then, 5 minutes before we had to come and record, there were not one, but two huge announcements from the world of entertainment. So one was very surprising, and one was less surprising. So we're going to get to them now. We haven't actually discussed them with each other yet either. So
no.
Should we go with surprising or non-surprising first?
Let's go non-surprising.
All right. So first off, the last headliner for Glastonbury has been announced. And it's Ed Sheeran. So he's joining Foo Fighters. And who is it? Radiohead?
It is Radiohead.
Radiohead, yeah. on the lineup for this year's festival. I don't want to badmouth it or whatever, but I mean, it is a snooze, isn't it?
It is so boring.
I mean, it's just, the thing, what I find hilarious is, last week the lineup apparently leaked online and Emily Evers came out and said, this isn't it, like, you know, we've got more stuff to come, but actually, Liza Minnelli is all I can say.
Liza with a Z.
Liza with a Z. So what do we think of this Ed Sheeran announcement, people, first of all?
I think it's really boring. I don't like Ed Sheeran's, you know, he's got a loop pedal. He writes mediocre lyrics. He's somehow got to be really famous.
Ooh!
And he's just not what Glastonbury's
about. Don't hold back,
about.
Rachel.
Well, you know, Thursday night.
Do you know what? The thing is,
he's just boring.
He kind of is what Glastonbury's about, in his defense, because he is, you know, he's a musician. He writes his own stuff. And he's, yeah, you know, he is a talented guy, which I will give him. But it's just, it's that thing of him being mixed with the Foo Fighters and Radiohead.
Do you know what? You couldn't pay me money to go to that festival and watch those three headliners.
I like how you're like, you couldn't pay me money, and I'll do anything for a fiver.
We'll take a press trip though.
The thing is, I love Glastonbury. I think it's a brilliant festival, and I will go this year. Mm-hmm. But I just think the headliners, you know, things that have made it so good in the past, is they kind of go for it. They'll have like a rock headliner, then they'll have a curveball like Kanye or Beyonce, who maybe doesn't seem so like classically Glastonbury. And it's the mix of all three of them that makes it so good. And I feel like in the past couple of years, obviously this year, they've kind of struggled with that a bit.
I think it's important though. A lot of people will be sort of saying at this point, they'll be saying the same as, oh, like, the headliners are really boring. But actually there is so much more to Glastonbury than just the headliners. So as much as I'm not enjoying the headliners, and I'm sure other people aren't, I would say to anyone that's going and has got a ticket, there is so much more going on. Find other stuff to go and do.
Well, I didn't see one headliner last year. So I saw LCD Sound System instead of the people on the Sun, Coldplay. And I saw James Blake.
You know, that big band.
Well, I mean, that just goes to show, doesn't it? You couldn't even know who was performing.
This is the thing. Like, it really doesn't matter when you're there. But I do think it's just a bit of a shame, really. It is the UK's biggest festival. And it's kind of good to see them leading the way with some different choices. So to see that they're not doing that is sad.
What you just said as well, it's the UK's biggest festival. And that is just not representative of what the UK's music scene is like right now. Like, it's the same, you know, we chatted about the Brit Awards a few weeks ago and how they were dishing out these awards and people like Stormzy ended up getting snubbed. And this is exactly it. It's because we're not putting the right people. We're not giving the platforms to the right people.
It's kind of like there's this idea as well that people sort of have to achieve a certain level and then they kind of get the right to headline Glastonbury. But I think a really good example of that not being true is when Florence and the Machine stepped up instead of Foo Fighters. And she was so great. She absolutely owned it. You know, she only had 3 albums, which by Glastonbury standards, well, Ed Sheeran's got 3 actually. Back then, you know, she hadn't kind of been seen to have done enough. So she stepped in as a last minute replacement and absolutely smashed it.
Yeah, I feel like she wasn't on the same level as Ed Sheeran. People weren't perceiving her on that level.
She's not Adele. She's not Coldplay.
I mean, whether you say that was exciting was a matter of opinion. But
did you go?
No, I watched it on telly and had to switch off. I was just like, this is boring.
What you've just said is how I feel, because I've never been to Glastonbury. I will probably never go. There's only one woman who could get me to go to Glastonbury, and that's Madonna.
I thought you were going to say your mum.
Well, actually, there's only one woman who could get me to go to Glastonbury, and that would be me mum.
There's
only
one
woman who can get her to go to Glastonbury, and that's Madonna. So it's a vicious cycle. I'm not going to go to Glastonbury. I don't camp, and I don't do wet wipes and all that sort of stuff. But I do watch it on the telly every year. And so for me, watching these three people on the telly, I'm just like, no, skip. I'm not going to watch them. But, like, you know, Adele last year I watched, Kanye I couldn't wait to watch, even Florence and the Machine I watched, and I just think these three people, they're just so unimaginative, aren't they? Like,
it's just not exciting.
It's not exciting at all. Who would we have? Who would everybody have as their Glastonbury headliner that's more exciting?
See, if Gaga would put on a show like she put on at the Super Bowl, I would want Gaga.
If you'd said to me 6 weeks ago that Lady Gaga should headline Glastonbury, I would have said, girl, you want to check yourself, because that album... Girl, where do you think you're going?
Girl. No.
But then she did the Super Bowl, and that was incredible. And imagine that on the Glastonbury stage.
That would be absolutely
incredible. But, like, yeah, I think somebody on Gaga's level, someone who's actually going to entertain and, like, put a show on, and Ed Sheeran does not do that. He's got his lovely guitar and his lovely...
People love him, though.
Love that hoodie. Love him in that hoodie that he's
people
just
get things
pulled
wrong.
Out the bottom of the laundry basket and thrown on a headline Glastonbury in.
I think someone like Frank Ocean would be really exciting.
He's
headlining, it might be Love Box this year in London, and that announcement kind of really shook people. And that's a really small festival, so it's kind of like, imagine the impact of him being announced for Glastonbury. That would be huge.
It would be huge, I agree. This announcement was completely eclipsed by something that happened 20 minutes later, which was the new Bake Off announcement.
These PRs really need to get their ducks in a row, don't they?
Imagine Thursday afternoon, let's send out two huge announcements. But seriously, imagine 5 years ago someone sitting you down and going, oh yeah, the Glastonbury third headliner, nobody's going to care because they're going to announce who's presenting the Great British Bake Off instead. Like, imagine that. And yeah. Here we are. So it's being confirmed anyway. We've got Noel Fielding and Sandy Toksvig are replacing Mel and Sue, the nation's favourite new unlikely double act. And then Prue Leith is replacing Mary Berry. So obviously the big surprise there is Noel Fielding. What do we all think of this new lineup?
I mean, Rachel, you go first, because I don't have anything positive to say.
I'm excited, literally, we've not discussed this as a group yet. So
I'm really excited. I love Noel Fielding. I watched The Mighty Boosh. And then when he was on Buzzcocks as a captain, I think he's really funny. And also, I just love that they've gone for someone who hasn't been linked with the show at all. Like, yeah. We haven't at any point said, maybe they'll get Noel Fielding.
I don't think anyone's even considered it.
You know what? He's a really lovely guy. He's funny in that kind of silly, harmless way. I'm glad they haven't gone for somebody snarky. I'm glad they haven't gone for, like, a Jimmy Carr or, like, someone with that kind of not-so-nice
side. That's the thing. Noel Fielding, he's, you know, in quotes, he's cool. Like, he's NME cool. He was once on the cool list, I'm sure. And, like, you know, he's very irreverent and very silly, but he's not nasty. Like, he's not just going to take the piss out of all the contestants going on and trying to have a go of it. I'm interested to see how he works with, like, the rest of the team, though.
Well, that's... You know, part of the, like, the magic that Bake Off had before was kind of the innuendo. It wasn't cool. It was just, like... It was just quaint and, like, British. And I do wonder how... I know it's not going to be exactly the same show and they're probably not going for that vibe, but... I don't want Noel Fielding to turn it into the Noel Fielding show, because stuff I've seen him in, it's all been about him.
Do you know what, though? I know you're the biggest Bake Off fan of the three of us, so I know you're probably more concerned than the other two. But I used to watch him on Buzzcocks, and I thought he was brilliant, and I thought he just slotted right in. For somebody who saw off the wall and saw themselves and saw not... You know, not a team player, but they're so not like everybody else around them. I thought he blended in really well.
I mean, what we were saying, like... I think I said it when the announcement was where it was like, it feels very Channel 4. Like, it sort of feels like they are trying to, like, push the boundaries and, like, surprise people with the, like, the lineup and stuff. And Noel Fielding's, like, I think probably, like, most anonymous now for, like, Biz Quiz of the Year and stuff. Yeah. And his appearances on that. So it kind of seems like, even though it's not an obvious choice, it kind of feels like an obvious Channel 4 choice, if you see what I mean.
It makes sense. Like, once the kind of initial surprise of, like, wow, he's got the job wears off, you do think, okay, this makes sense.
But they must have screen tested together for them to get the gig, which makes me think that there must be some sort of weird, funny chemistry there.
Well, even in the statements they gave, like, Sandy Toksvig said she felt like she'd lost, felt like she'd met up with a long-lost weird cousin or something. And I thought, yeah, I can kind of see that, because sometimes the most unlikely combinations are the best.
Yeah.
I think the thing is as well, it's either going to work or absolutely completely fail.
Yeah.
And I like to think they wouldn't have taken this chance if it wasn't going to work.
I think we only have to look at the nightly show to look how everyone is going to approach the upcoming series of the Great British Bake Off.
It's funny though, because people love Bake Off so much that I don't know whether the knives are going to be out as much. I think people love poking holes and stuff, definitely. But will it be the case with the Bake Off? We'll have to wait and see, won't we?
We will.
God, I wrapped that up nicely, didn't
you
I? Considering
in a little
we had
bow, didn't you?
Literally 0 seconds of preparation for that discussion. So we'll move on to something we've actually prepped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go on.
All right, so now let's just get the script that I've actually written. So this week on Coronation Street, it was all about 16-year-old Bethany Platt and her relationship with much older Nathan. So viewers already know that her story arc is going to be about grooming, and she's going to be involved in this terrible sex ring and all this sort of thing. And this week, the storyline took a dark turn. It took its first dark turn as she showed up to this party and she was the only young girl there and everybody else was older men. So Bernardo has come out and said that this could actually help children protect themselves from this sort of thing. So what I want to talk about is, why is it important that soaps cover heavy storylines like this one? Who wants to go first?
Well, I think the thing with soaps is that's really nice. It's kind of, it's maybe not so much true now as when we were kids, but they're kind of on, they're in your living room just after dinner. Everyone kind of sees them and you sort of see them as a family.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really good place to introduce issues that actually can be quite serious for like young people, or, you know, we've seen, so obviously this grooming storyline, it is uncomfortable viewing.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching clips of it today and watching the episodes, it does make your skin crawl. It's horrible. But like, parents or like a child or a teenager could see that and recognise like bits of things that have happened to them in it.
Yeah.
And I just
things
think,
that they could,
you know,
be involved in themselves. If
one person realises that someone they know is at risk, that's a really good use of the storyline.
Mm. I think EastEnders is kind of exploring not a similar topic, but they're kind of exploring an issue that affects young people at the moment. And they're sort of doing the revenge porn storyline,
yeah,
and the school bullying that results off of that. And, you know, it's had a lot of criticism that it's turning into Grange Hill and it's all about the young people. And but you know what? I actually think quite a lot of it is unfounded, because I think, you know, there are kids watching EastEnders with their parents that maybe wouldn't know about the, like, things about revenge porn. And it's also teaching those parents about that issue as well.
That's
that they
the
might
thing,
not
isn't it?
Know
yeah.
is going on in their kids' lives.
And, you modern know, issues, aren't there? Like...
Exactly. And, you know, while we shouldn't look to EastEnders to teach us about everything, it is actually a way of getting issues into the homes of people that might not necessarily know about this stuff.
Mm. I think especially with kind of the issues that concern like parents and children, it gives you like a safe kind of thing to talk about. You don't need to talk about real life situations. You can talk to your kids about like, oh, well, look at what's happening to Bethany and Corey. What do you think about that? It's kind of like a safe way of coming to the topic without saying like, oh, have any of your friends had this? You know, it's just...
It's baby steps, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just a nice kind of easy way to do it. And I think that it's really good that the soaps have taken this on and kind of said, we are going to try and do this.
I think the criticism a lot of people have is that these heavy storylines, they just don't really fit in. And they can be quite shoehorned in next to, like, you know, you'll have this terrible thing happening to Bethany in one scene, and then you'll have Norris and Rita sat in the pub chatting about stamps in the next. But what I think soaps do really well... as an outside person, I don't actually watch soaps, but I do follow these storylines, is that they tend to work with like organisations and charities and things to make sure that they're handled sensitively. Because a lot of people, I know, worry that they're going to be really heavy-handed and really like distasteful even, but they do work hard, don't they?
Yeah, I think the thing is as well, in the way that things work today with like Twitter and social media, they couldn't afford to not get it right. Because as soon as there's any kind of scene which is a bit sort of, oh, I don't know if that character should have kind of gone about it like this. Like, EastEnders has done really well, but there were a few developments in the Lee Carter storyline, mainly because of the fact that the actor was leaving. But there
what
were
was the
few...
Lee Carter storyline?
So it was a depression storyline, and for the most part, it was handled really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
But then there were just a couple of points where, you know, he went to his dad, Mick, who's played by Danny Dyer at one point, and just the responses and the way it was kind of dealt with maybe weren't quite so great. And you can't get away with things like that because everyone will jump on Twitter. 10 years ago, you could have screened that episode and no one would really notice.
Yeah. They'd have written into points of view.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you know what? There might be one opinion piece in The Independent, but
yeah,
that would be it.
But nowadays, you'll be trending and there'll be blogs on it and everyone will have their say.
And do you know what? I think that's a good thing, though. Mm. I know that people go on about PC gone mad and stuff, but I think it's good that if people are dissatisfied with the way certain issues are being put on screen, that they can.
But I think it's really important with soaps as well. And you touched on it a second ago, Daniel, when you said about, oh, you know, the issues being juxtaposed against Rita and Norris in the pub. I think it's really important that they have light and shade in the soaps. No one wants to sit through a half hour episode every night of the week when it's really heavy going. And I also just think it kind of reflects life. Like, life isn't just a constant like up or a down. It's both at the same time.
And it is going on around the corner.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It is. You are sat somewhere and then something terrible's happening 5 minutes away. And that's,
I mean, look at us. We were full of the joys of spring 15 minutes ago. And then we had two big news announcements.
Exactly. Yeah. Had to come in and win it. Shall we move on to our final topic?
Yes.
Okay, brilliant.
Yay.
So in further TV news, the second series of Love is now streaming on Netflix, and it seems that the criticism of the first series, which was mainly centered around the fact that lead characters Mickey and Gus were completely unlikable, has basically not been taken on board. So yeah, these two characters, they're in the lead in the sitcom, and they're just as basically obnoxious and toxic as ever, and it sounds like people are basically turning off because of that. So basically, how important is it that we're actually able to kind of sympathise and get on board with characters of a show if we want to enjoy it, especially with a show that's very modern, like Love?
I think that it's, and it's a tough line to toe, because personally, I quite enjoy seeing unlikable characters. I think they're easier to relate to. None of us are
perfect.
Maybe
it's for you.
Well, it's just that, you know, when I think about the shows I watch and how likeable the people actually are, I don't think any of them really are likeable. I watched Love, and I've just started to hate myself for it because they're both terrible, terrible people. In Girls, all four of the female leads struggle with various issues and are obnoxious and self-centered and awful. And I just, yeah, I struggle to think of kind of any sort of sitcoms. I love Nighty Night. Jill is not likeable.
Nighty Night I find very stressful. Like, but that's the thing with all of these sitcoms with, like, unlikable people in the lead. Like, I watched the first series of Love, which is on Netflix. It's about, basically, a man and a woman who meet each other and fall in love. It's really groundbreaking. And they are just not very likable. And so by the end, I just felt exhausted by it. I think if you'd asked me a year and a half ago what I thought about sitcoms with unlikable people in the leads, I'd be like, oh, yeah, this is really edgy. It's a new, fresh take on things. But right now, I just don't think we need it. Like, I just think we need, like, something like Gavin and Stacey. Like, they weren't perfect characters, but they were just, you know, they were just nice. It was just a nice bit of escapism.
See, I don't watch a lot of sitcoms, or I certainly don't watch, like, edgy sitcoms or, like, Netflix sitcoms. I just watch my friend's box set on repeat over and over again. But, like, I don't know. It's, I think it really depends on your humour. If you've got, like, a dark sense of humour, which, personally, I don't, you're gonna enjoy those sort of darker characters that mess with sort of dark comedy. I just don't particularly like them much myself.
Do you know what it is? It's funny you mentioned Friends, because I've got Friends written down on me bit paper here, because I do lots of prep before the sitcom.
Podcast.
The sitcom, the podcast.
Could be a sitcom today.
But I do, because I do lots of prep before. And Friends, you know, we think of it as being very easy watching and very, like, hangover TV. But actually, if you really look at all those characters, not many of them are very likable.
The men are trash.
Yeah.
Like, the men in Friends are disgusting.
But you know,
sorry,
what?
Sorry, Ash. You look really heartbroken now I've said that.
I just can't deal with it when people slag off Friends.
No, it's not slagging Friends off at all. It's just that they're not cookie-cutter perfect people. You know, they have a lot of flaws. Especially, I agree with Rachel, the men, and especially, well, like, Ross has a lot of... you know, they're not likable people. You wouldn't, like, someone like Phoebe, she's a lot of fun to watch, but you wouldn't actually want to be her friend.
Oh, see, I do.
I just think you'd spend 5 minutes with somebody like that and you'd be absolutely knackered. And, like, not in the way that, you know, we spend 5 minutes with each other and we're knackered. Like, you know, like, you genuinely...
Even Rachel, like, I love Rachel from Friends. She's a brilliant character. But there's a whole episode that hinges on her convincing another woman to shave her head. And it will look really bad. And Ross, the woman Ross is going out with at the time. Like, that's literally a
there's
plot.
There's a lot
that
of that.
Is a
that's,
terrible thing to
that's
do.
That's tip of the iceberg. And you know what it is? We do have a little giggle at it. But it is, you know, like, if that was to happen in Girls, if Lena Dunham was to do that in Girls... People would be writing things about how she's manipulative and abusive. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So it's like, I think people think of it as being quite a new thing of these unlikable characters. But actually, they have been, you know, Carrie Bradshaw in Sex and the City, she's not likable. No. I mean, I find her likable because I relate to her.
I just thought of unlikable characters that I do really like.
Oh, who?
Eddie and Patsy.
See, that's exactly,
exactly
it.
That's like, yeah,
example.
They're not likable.
That's,
like,
that's taken me a good 5 minutes to get to that point.
You know what I think it is, though? I think it's with shows like Love and Girls, we kind of see them in a context that we exist in. So you're kind of, you're seeing these people in their 20s and they're really horrible. And it gets a bit much because it is so close to home. When Eddie and Patsy are awful people, it's fine because they're aging PRs and that's all part of
they're
the joke.
They're in another world to us.
Yeah, it's when you see it in Love, like, obviously it's set in LA, we live in London, but they are living lives quite like our own. And I think that's the point where it becomes a bit
uncomfortable. I mean, Rachel, I've been out with you before. Your lives is very similar to Eddie and Patsy.
I will not be making a comment at this time. The one show I did think of, though, literally has taken me 5 minutes to think of, is Master of None, which is coming back.
Yes.
And Aziz Ansari's character, I think, is at the more likable end of the spectrum.
I think he's the dreamy end of the spectrum. Like, that's exactly it. I want more shows like that. That's what I want, especially in the troubled times that we live in, I just think something like Masters of None, where the jokes aren't at anyone's expense. The people aren't unlikable, they're flawed. Like, I really love this show on Netflix, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, that you should watch if you don't watch it already, everybody in the world. But, like, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is really good. The characters aren't necessarily likable. They're very, very flawed, but they do have redeeming qualities. Whereas when I watch Girls, and I have watched it, I don't watch it regularly, but when I do watch it, I just get to the end and I think, well, life is meaningless. Like, that's just how I feel at the end of it all.
You don't feel better about yourself.
I don't. And, you know, I already don't feel great about the world outside of me right now. And so I just want Bake Off. I just want to sit with Prueleith and Sandy Togsvig.
I just quite like Hyacinth Bouquet, to be honest.
Yeah. She had it going on, didn't she? She knew where it was at.
In a world full of Hannahs from Girls, just be a Hyacinth Bouquet.
A total snob.
That is me.
No, you're Eddie and Patsy rolled into one. Yeah. On that note, should we wrap up? Should we have a quiz?
Yes.
Go on then.
So around these parts, we like to end on a quiz, as well you know. And this week, one of the 1990s most polarising pop acts is making a return to the UK singles chart. So inspired by that, here's this week's quiz. Rachel, as the reigning champion, I'm coming to you first. So the first question. In the traditional rhyme relating to magpies, it's two for joy, three for a girl, and four for a boy. But what's one?
Where? Oh my God. Can you say that again, please?
I will say it again. In the traditional rhyme relating to magpies, it's two for a joy, three for a girl, two for joy, three for a girl, and four for a boy. But what's one?
Oh my God, I know this, but I've completely forgotten it.
Can I have it?
Let me try and guess. No, you know what? I don't know. Sorry.
Oh, well, what an unfortunate start of the quiz. Ash?
Is it One for Sorrow?
It's One for Sorrow! Oh. That's right, Steps' first single to go top five back in 1998, peaking at number two. Ash, Hamlet, Othello, King Lear and Romeo and Juliet are all examples of Shakespearean what?
Tragedies!
That's right, the Bee Gees classic, which was later covered by Steps,
yes!
becoming their signature tune.
You didn't think I was going to get that, did you, Rachel?
I did not say a single thing.
I'm not tearing you two apart again. But Rachel, it's a maths question. What's 3 cubed?
Is it 9?
Oh, so close. It's 8. Yes, as in 5, 6, 7. Oh, Steps' line dancing infused debut single, which peaked at number 14 upon its release in 1997.
3 cubed?
Yeah.
3 times 3 times 3 is 27.
I said 3 cubed, didn't I? And I meant 2 cubed.
Also, we proved who can do maths on this team.
Yes. Not me or you, Daniel.
No, I can do maths. I just can't read.
Fair. I still wouldn't have got it, so it's fine.
Okay, good. I'm glad. I'm glad that the quiz had a cock up in, because it wouldn't have been the same without it, would it? Who am I on to you, Ash?
Me.
Which West End show sees the cast using their bodies and everyday items to create percussion beats?
Heartbeat.
No.
Oh, Richard, you got this one?
Stomp.
That's right. And if anyone invites you to go and see Stomp, don't. It's a bloody racket. Anyway, Stomp was Steps' second and final number one and famously sampled Chic's Everybody Dance. Rachel, you're back in the game. The summer of 1967, often described as a pivotal time for hippie culture, is often referred to by what nickname?
Oh my God, I can tell that Ash knows it because of the way he's staring at me. I don't know the answer. I'm sorry.
It's the summer of 1967 and it's pivotal in hippie culture.
Stop giving her it on his plate.
I'm just repeating the question.
I don't know the answer to this.
Ash, I'm sensing you know it.
It's the summer of love.
Cut that out. Yes, it's in one of the most tenuous links to Steps of the day. That was Summer of Love, releases a double A-side with When I Said Goodbye by Steps. Ash, coming back to you. Which ITV drama eventually led to the spin-off The Royal?
This is the answer that I said for the last question, and it's Heartbeat.
That's right.
That was such a good show.
I really wanted to sing them, but I really restrained myself.
If only I had that restraint, then I could have avoided the embarrassment I suffered literally 20 seconds ago. So, Ash, well done, pet.
Thank you.
Back in the quiz. Who knew that Steps knowledge would come in handy after all these years, yeah?
No, right?
All right, well, we're off. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week for more Into It. And don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. Laters!